Welcome to the Events Insight. Today, we are joined by Richard Golden. Ellen and I hope you enjoy our conversation. Hello, Ellen.
Hi, Jack. Happy New Year to you.
And a happy new year to you too, 2021.
I know, let's hope it's a bit better than last year, hey?
Well, you know what we're like, we're always thinking positively, so let's take these small steps, take the wins where we can get them and move forward.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And how was your time off?
It was lovely. Goes too fast like it always does. But, you know, now we've got January here and it's just like you say, looking forward. Let's just get on with things.
So looking forward then, our guest today, first guest of 2021, tell me a little bit about.
Right, well, today is someone that we both know, Jack. Our guest is Richard Golding, owner of Exhibition Vision and stadium announcer for Birmingham City Football Club. With a career that started as a professional DJ working here in the UK, I can't even say it, UK and across in Europe, Richard's career has taken a few twists and turns on his journey in events that'll be great to hear about. Like I say, we both know him, we've both worked with him before, so we both know he's going to be good value during this conversation. So let's let him tell us a detail about what he does, how he does it during a conversation, shall we, and let the listeners find out more about him.
Yeah, let's get started then. Welcome, Mr. Richard Golden.
Good afternoon. Actually, that's really rubbish for a podcast because it could have been recorded at any time.
Hi, Rich. How are you? How are you doing?
Hi, Ellen. Nice to see you, hear you. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. I'm good. It's good to see you, yeah.
Rich, I think we should just get straight into it. I think you've got a lot to give for our listeners, and I'd like to start off with going straight into the first question, which is about your current role. Now, I know you're a man of many hats, so if you could tell us a little bit about what you do currently and what your responsibilities are within those roles.
Well, yeah, I've got two roles. One of them is a proper job. The other one's a bit of fun, I suppose. Actually, it's not fun because we're not doing that well. My main role is I am director of Exhibition Vision Event Services. Have been for 13 years. This year it'll be 13 years, I think. So we started off as AV furniture hire, and obviously into exhibition stand building now. That's a brief talk about that. My secondary role is I am the stadium announcer of Birmingham City Football Club, which sounds very glamorous. But when you've had lots of joys and sorrows over the last 15 years, it's mainly sorrows. So that's my two roles at the moment.
So in terms of the stadium announcer role, and we'll dive into that one first, What is that responsibility? You know, what are you expected to do as a stadium announcer?
Well, it's a little bit different at the moment because obviously during COVID, it's a little bit more basic. But if we pretend that COVID isn't here, my role would generally be at Birmingham City. I would arrive 2.5 hours before. I would do my script for the day. I would have pre-match marketing messages to give out. I would bring the two teams out. Now, obviously, when we were in the Premier League, that was a massive wow factor in the Premier League because you're literally stood 2 metres away from these absolute stars. And I am in control of them coming out of the tunnel and the fans giving us the roar and us kicking off on time. Generally, I am in control of that. In the Championship, not quite as glamorous, but you know, there's a lot of players still in the Championship that have played in the Premier League, and I'm stood there and we're bringing them out. I do all the match day announcements. I do halftime interviews with previous players. We do a bit of a game with the fans, and that's generally it. It's a job that I would probably never give up. It's a secondary job, really, because obviously it doesn't pay the bills, but it's a job that you would just never, ever give up, really. And we've had some, we have had some highs. Obviously, we've been to Wembley. I was on the pitch at Wembley when we played Arsenal in the League Cup. You actually get 5 minutes on the pitch. Each announcer, I couldn't believe it, each announcer gets 5 minutes on the pitch before the game, and then you get to read your teams out, your team lineup out. Anybody to say that they've been on the pitch at Wembley for a major cup final when there's 90,000 fans in the stadium? No, not many people can say that. And I feel very, very privileged to be able to have been in that position. And we beat Arsenal, you know, so at the same time, fantastic. For a Birmingham fan, beat Arsenal in Europe after... We didn't even realise we was in Europe, but yeah, we beat Arsenal and we got into Europe, and that as a Birmingham fan was massive.
So that was part of your journey then, but let's track all the way back, because Rich, we know each other quite well, and we've worked together for quite a long time, but I know that you're... journey to this point has, I think I used the term, Ellen, twists and turns, didn't we? You know, there have been quite a few twists and turns on the way. But you are a man who loves his music as well. So do you want to sort of start back to where you started off in sort of the events side of things, and or how you got into events?
Wow. Again, accident, if I'm honest, a complete accident. I was... At 15, 16, I was a mobile DJ, and my mate, who was 2 years older than me, could drive, and we decided to set up a little mobile DJ business. He had a Ford Fiesta, we got a trailer, we bought loads of gear, and we advertised in the Yellow Pages, believe it or not, which people used to use to advertise themselves. If anybody, any of our younger listeners don't know, the Yellow Pages used to come through your door, and it was massive. It was absolutely huge. So we advertised in there. We got a few gigs. I then proceeded to meet a few people in the nightclub industry, where I got given a chance to be a DJ for a emergency services night on a Wednesday, once a month on a Wednesday. I was 17 and I got given this gig in a club where I would just be a guest spot, and there was 1,200 people in the room on a Wednesday night, the last Wednesday of the month. And I've been doing, to this point, I've been doing birthday parties, 50ths, 60ths. And all of a sudden, I'm in a nightclub with loads of nurses and doctors with their hands in the air going mad on a Wednesday night. And I just give it my all. And the manager that night, when he gave me this trial, and a very good friend of mine now, Adrian Bates, actually, he said, next Saturday, I want you to start in the pre-club bar. So I had to give up the mobile discos. And my mate, who was the driver, he was the guy who would drive, set the gear up. I was the guy who had the gift of the gab with the mic. I could mix the tunes. He couldn't do any of that. So we actually fell out, because I'd gone my own way. Long story short, I then ended up DJing at this club in Solihull for 2 years. And the manager, Adrian, I went up to collect my wages the one Saturday night. And he said, oh, it's your last night next week. And I said, all right, okay, what is that? He said, I'm not sacking you. He said, I'm sending you to Greece for 6 months. And I just looked at him, like, I was about 19, and I just looked at him like, you know, I'm not. He was very persuasive. He said, oh, yes, you are. He said, you're going to go to Greece for 6 months, and when you come back, you can have your job back here. So it turned out that he used to DJ out there many years ago, and he's forever since sent DJs out there, and I was the chosen one. And I came back in the October, and... I came back a completely different person, to be honest with you, because that was the best thing ever, to go to Greece for 6 months, DJ every night, no nights off apart from one night, which was because somebody died in the village. But we had one night off in 6 months, and I came back a different DJ. And then a lady came into the nightclub one night. I hope I'm not boring you, by the way. I hope you want to hear this story. a lady came into the nightclub one night, and I'd come back from Greece, and I'd got my nights back, and I was doing a Thursday night, I was doing a Friday, a Saturday, maybe a Monday. And she said, wow, she says, you've got a really good voice on the microphone. I went, oh, thank you. She said, we're doing a community radio RSL, which an RSL is a restricted service license. So a radio station will get 2 broadcasts per year for 30 days. And then what they did was they did a 5-month course, and then you'd have a month broadcast at the end of it. And then they'd have another lot of students to do another. And it was an A-level equivalent in radio broadcasting. She said, would you like to come down and do this? And I was like, I was used to going home at 4 or 5 in the morning at this point and getting up at 1 in the afternoon. So it was a massive shock at sort of 22 to sort of get up early and go to this college course. But I could see the bigger picture. I had a couple of friends in radio, Phil Upton from BR&B at the time, and also a guy called Rick Vaughan. They were both on BR&B, which is now Free Radio. And I was going to the studio, learning a little bit about what they were doing. So I did this radio course, got flying colours in all the sex sort of modules, ended up doing the broadcast, and just fell in love with radio. And I was told to try and get a job via a website called Media UK, put your showreel on there and sort of get yourself out there. And BR&B, which was a massive station in Birmingham at the time, offered me, without even hearing me like properly, they offered me overnights. But do you know what they paid for an overnight? I'm talking 1 in the morning till 5 in the morning. Have a guess, actually, Jack. What do you think they paid for that?
What, for a one shift?
Yeah, per night.
Probably, what, 15, 20 quid an hour?
Well, it was £50 a show. So it's a tenner an hour, or just over. Now, I was already earning a load of money from DJing, and I was only young, so I wasn't willing to give up that to go and do these overnights. So it sort of dawned on me that with radio, it's sort of who you know, not what you know with radio. And unless you're on a prime time slot, you're not going to make any money. So I advertised my thing on Media UK, and I met a guy who wanted some help at the NEC afternoons and evenings, which suited me because I was working 4 or 5 nights a week DJing, and I could get up when I wanted and still go and earn a bit more extra money. And then that is my journey into exhibitions.
If you could throw in, if you could pick a favourite event that you've worked at, what would it be and why?
Favourite event I've worked at? There's been a lot. It depends on, there's a few different scenarios, because there's different, if it's a show that, my favourite show for looking back at what we've achieved and the wow factor, I would say it has to be Ice London. Because that show, and it's all about casinos and gambling, etc. That show is a flagship show at XL London. I've done it ever since I started exhibitions and events, but now I'm doing it for myself. And over the years, I've seen, and I think it's a story for quite a lot of people in exhibitions and events, but you'll get a customer who's at a similar level to you at the time, and then you and the customer, you both grow. So you'll have a bigger turnover, and they'll have a bigger stand the next year, and you're sort of growing with the, and it's sort of a big sort of family thing. But with Ice London, I've got a couple of customers there that have started. I mean, it's both sides of XL. They've started in the far corner of XL, a tiny little sort of shell scheme dressing, ended up sort of closer into the middle. And at that show, the closer into the middle you are, the bigger you are, because you've got the likes of Novomatic, JPM. They're all the big boys are in the big.
Yes, huge stands. Yeah.
So we've sort of grown as they've grown, and to look back at what we've produced for them, I mean, the show's got the whole wow factor, but the stands are amazing at that show. If you want to talk about a show where it's another favourite event for different reasons to that, so obviously we work very, very much with Jack, yourself, Jack, on Hillhead in Buxton every 2 years. Now, this show, as Jack knows, is a completely different kettle of fish, because we've both done this show, Jack, and, well, you've done it longer than me, but I've done it for the last, 16 years, and it's every 2 years. Some years you could be there in your shorts and everybody's getting along fantastically and it's lovely weather and you finish on time and the customers are all happy. Other years you could be battling a river coming down down the slipway into the quarry and everybody's miserable and wet and things aren't just going right. But at the same time, it doesn't matter if it's hot and everything's going well, or if it's cold, wet, and everybody's sort of getting on each other's nerves. It's the type of show that brings everybody together. And what I mean by that is you'll do 12, 13 hours on site, but then the football will be on because it's always on a World Cup or a Euro. It's always on there. And if the kickoff times are going with us, you'll get back to the big house that we're all staying in together, and one of us will do some cooking while the other one, you know, cleans something out or whatever. And we'll all sit around the table. It doesn't matter what's happened throughout the day. We'll all sit at the table, 8, 9, 10 of us. We'll all have a big spaghetti bolognese or whatever, and we'll have a beer, and everybody's just smiling. And it's part of a community, like part of a big family, isn't it, Jack? I mean, you know, that show, Hillhead.
Yeah, and Ellen, he's only saying spaghetti bolognese because that's the only thing that Rich can actually cook. Now, it is literally the only thing that is passable by way of cooking in Richard's kitchen.
Well, at least he can cook something. That's good enough. That's good enough.
There is a few other things. Tomato soup can do that.
What, you mean you can open a tin?
Do you know what? I actually struggled to open a tin the other day. Struggle. Because we've got a new tin opener. What's happened to tin openers, by the way? They used to be simple. You need a science degree now to use one.
So you talked about that it's the camaraderie. I quite agree when you're working in a big event. And if it's something that you do regularly, whether it be every year or every 2 years, you do become a kind of little family, don't you? So, yeah, I get that. I totally understand that. So looking at the events you've done then in your long history, what is the biggest learning point you've had? What sort of challenges have you had to overcome that you've really taken away some good learning from?
Dealing with customers in different ways, I think, is one of the biggest challenges, because you could have – everybody's got a different, completely different personality. So somebody could come and be absolutely, like – annoyed about one tiny little thing, but you could get a completely another customer who doesn't see that little problem, can see the bigger picture. So it's about people management a lot of the time, because you have to get to know the customer and get to know what's important to them. And what I mean by that is we could have during the build, we could have a banner graphic that ends up with a small fault in it, but no one else can see that from a customer point of view, but the client can see it. And there's two different types of clients. Sometimes they will not let that, they'll beat themselves up about that being there and won't focus on what's important, what else is going on the stand. You know, that the tiny little 1% of a fault, Joe Bloggs, the customer, isn't going to notice. But, like, they beat themselves up about it. I mean, I have one client, and I'm not going to mention him because he'll kill me, but one client came on the stand the first year we'd done the build for them and said when he looks into the light, it blinds him. But the people that are walking on the stand are not looking into the light. They're looking at the products, you know? So I think people management is the most demanding thing at the show. And you can have the best 3-4 day build up, but the last day of build, if you think it's gone as well as you think it could have gone, it actually might not have when the customer gets there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And lighting is a really good example, because it's one of the things that, you know, when I'm discussing projects with customers, I say lighting's more important than quite a lot of other things on stand. And we often have a long debate over the amount of the budget that is spent on lighting, you know, but in my eyes, if they can't see the product that you've got on the stand, there's no point in having the product there, you know. And you have the big debate over, oh, all this lighting, and when I look up, all I can see is lights. People aren't going to be looking up. They're looking at your product. And then you get the other one in terms of, these lights are so hot, I'm going to be stood under these lights for so long. Yeah, but your customers aren't. They're coming on and they're seeing your product, you know. So lighting for me is crucial. If it's probably number two or three on my list of things that I won't budge on when I'm discussing it with customers.
I mean, I had a customer at Southampton Boat Show last year. Obviously, sadly this year it wasn't on. Who, after one day, was phoning me, and bearing in mind it's a six, seven day show, maybe longer, for phoning me, asking me how to turn the lights off because they're too hot. And I'm like, but your stand's going to look rubbish. And they're like, we don't care. The lights are too hot. They're LED. They're not too hot at all. Like, you know, your stand's going to look rubbish, but they don't listen.
No, and you can't please all the people all the time, can you? Like we said, some clients will worry about the tiniest thing and others won't even notice it. And when you say it's been the biggest challenge, what do you do then, Rich? How do you get to know your customer? How do you find out what's going to be their pain point, if you like?
Well, they more or less let you know when they arrive. The best way to deal with it, I find, is to go out, let's say it's XL, just walk out onto the lorryway and scream. I'm joking. The best way to deal with it is to basically try and make them understand that, e.g. me, I sort of do know what people are looking for, because this is what we do on a daily basis. This is potentially what they do once a year. And just because their marketing strategy isn't quite working to what's been produced, actually, we can actually talk them into some sense sometimes and make them realize that actually we do know what they are trying to achieve. And even though it might not be quite right in their head, actually what we're achieving here is 95% of what they wanted to achieve. Does that make sense? Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I think you do. I know there's something. When I worked with Jack, he certainly talks about giving a professional cuddle, and it is true. I think once you get to work with an exhibition company who you know you can trust, and you know that they understand where you're coming from, where your clients are coming from, and what they need, then it just makes things easy. So that kind of experience you're talking about is invaluable, really, going forward with new clients.
Yeah, and I think that even starts before you even get on site. I think you have those discussions when it comes to the design element as well, because sometimes you have clients who come with a specific idea in their mind and you know that it won't work. And trying to have that open conversation with them and guide them. You know, I always talk about an event being a journey, and you're on that journey together, and you kind of work hand in hand to get the right conclusion for the client, but one that you have influenced, because like Richard just said, you kind of know what you're talking about. You've been doing it for years. And sometimes you do have to have those conversations that they sometimes don't want to hear. But it's about having that honest conversation.
But it's difficult, isn't it, sometimes, because you have to be very careful with your approach on that, because if you're not careful, they will just literally think that, no, I don't believe in what this guy is telling me, and they could potentially go elsewhere. But we really just do care about the customer and the end product. And so many times I've seen budgets where there's the particular amount of money has been spent on something which is just completely unnecessary, and it's not going to bring them any extra footfall on the stand. And you'll try to talk them out of it, and they're set in their ways. And then after the show, you'll have a post show meeting, and then they'll say, well, yeah, that didn't really work. And I'm like, okay. So sometimes it does take that 12, 18 months to get them on side and then realize that actually you've got their back, you know what they're looking to do, but we can advise on where the money is best spent to get footfall on the stand, because it's bums on seats that count, you know?
Yeah, and I'm sure you've got the same with some of your customers now, Richard and Ellen, yours too, where when you have built that relationship, you actually have customers who are ringing you before they even consider going to an event. You know, and they're actually saying, we're thinking about this event. I mean, I talked to a customer out of going to an event that they'd gone to for 7 years because I didn't think it was any worthwhile any longer for their marketing strategy. And they turned around and said, yeah, but Jack, we pay you to do our event. And I said, no, you pay me for my advice. And I said, and we've got a long-term relationship, and I don't think at this moment in time that show is a benefit for you. And we talked through the pros and cons of it, and eventually they didn't. And they actually allocated some of that budget to another show that we do for them in Hanover. And they had a superb show in Hanover, and they didn't lose anything out of it. But that has to be, that trust has to be gained over a period of time. And it's that honest approach, isn't it?
Definitely 100%, yeah.
To move us on a little bit, Rich, the aim of the podcast, which you'll know from having listened to other episodes, is our listeners, we try and get guests such as yourself on to give them advice, because the listener makeup that we have who've been sort of downloading and engaging in the podcast is made up of event professionals, students, recent graduates, and people from all around the globe. So we always put our guests on the spot at the end and say, if you were to give someone one piece of advice to take away and look at internally themselves, what would it be? What would be that good piece of advice you could give them?
So if I was an American person, I'd say keep it real. One piece of advice, and this is going to sound strange, but it's being able to deal with rejection. And I'll elaborate on that. When I first started putting myself out there for the stand builds, the company out there for stand builds, rejection was the biggest thing to deal with, because you could have put a lot of time and effort into, let's say, ideas, maybe 2-3 conference calls with the clients, doing one or two designs without any upfront fees, and then finding out, thinking that you were going to get that job and banking on you were going to get that job, to find out they've gone elsewhere because somebody else came up with something better or something more, more on their level. And at first you sort of take it to heart, because you've put a lot of time and effort into it, and it means a lot to you to win that job and to take that client down a 2-3-4-5 year journey with you. But it actually really doesn't matter. You're wasting time and mental energy on things that don't matter. What you should be doing is using that energy and focus to find the client that does want to listen to your ideas and does want to take on board your design ideas. And that for me is quite hard. And I'll just go back to the stadium announcing stuff. And this helped me with the exhibitions, because I was told by a very, very, very wise man, and that's coming after Christmas now, so the wise men thing have all gone. But they're still around, the wise men are there. And I was told by somebody at Birmingham City who went my first season, probably 4 or 5 months in, and I wasn't very good, if I'm honest. I was a rabbit in the headlights. And the guy said to me, do not look at social media or do not look at posts on Birmingham City. He said, because there'll be people there that are being very negative. He went, don't look at that. He said, just work on the positives. And that helped me with the exhibitions, because if I was to go into it and say, well, why haven't you gone with us? What have we done wrong? Why didn't you like my ideas? I think I know better than you. You can't say that to the customer. But what you can do is you can learn and move on and focus all your positive energy into the next client. who you will probably win and take forward. And there has been clients that we've lost, as in we've done some stuff for some ideas, designs. They've gone with someone else and they've come back to us the next year and they've gone, okay, we should have listened. So my advice is, don't worry about rejection. Rejection is just something you have to deal with in the industry. Just move on. Focus your positive thoughts on the next potential customer, because you follow your heart and you know you're in it to help them out.
Right. Now it's time for today's quickfire round. And this episode of the quickfire round is sponsored by Hospitality and Events North. They're one of the leading magazine and websites for our industry, spreading from the Midlands all the way up to Scotland. With over 15,000 subscribers, it's one of the go-to hubs for event industry news. So with that, Ellen, Richard, are you both ready? If so, I will pass it across to you.
Well, I'm ready. Are you ready, Rich?
As I'll ever be.
Okay, let's go. Question one. Are you an early bird or a night owl?
Night owl.
Would you prefer to fly or drive?
Oh, depends. Fly.
Okay. Hotel or apartment?
Apartment.
Winter or summer event?
Summer.
Read a book or watch a film?
Neither, but watch a film if I have to.
Concert or festival?
Oh, that's a tough one. Concert.
Cinema or theatre?
Theatre, because that's where I learnt my trade many years ago in school.
Okay. Favourite event location? That could be a type of location or an actual geographical location.
That's difficult, Ellen. It's quick fire though, so I'm going to say it's my favourite event. It's in the middle of a quarry. It's in Buxton Hillhead.
Brilliant. Favourite social media platform?
Facebook. Oh.
What is your go-to beverage socially?
Stella Artois. Or as we like to say in England, Stella.
Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
What?
Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
No.
And finally, if you had a superpower, what would it be? Maybe to think, make decisions quicker, I don't know.
I've seen what you did there. Obviously, I'm going to edit this, so it's fine. I can just think.
I might not edit it.
To promote Birmingham City automatically to the Premier League.
That would need a superpower, wouldn't it? Rich, can I take the opportunity to thank you for coming on, mate? As I say, I knew that your background, your route into the events industry would be one that I knew that our listeners would benefit from listening to. For all the rubbish that normally comes out of your mouth, you know, this 40 minutes has been worthwhile, so I thank you for that. He's been on his best behaviour. But, yeah, appreciate you giving up the time.
Yeah, thanks, Rich.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me, guys. And collectively across the whole industry, let's hope that we can all have a better 2021 going forward.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, cheers. Thanks ever so much. Bye-bye. So what a way to start 2021 on the podcast. Richard's always good for a chat and a conversation.
It's good. It's really interesting, though. Again, it's, you know, getting into events by accident and starting at this time DJing. I mean, I don't think we've had one of those before, have we? But it sounds like he had a right ball.
I would never say it to his face, but he actually does know what he's doing on the decks as well. You know, I would never make his head any bigger than it needs to be about his DJing, but he does actually know what he's doing on there.
He does. Right, okay, well, yes, and like, you know, we've both worked with him and he's a really good bloke, and I loved his advice about dealing with rejection. It's something that No one's mentioned that yet, but it's there. I mean, I suppose it's there in every walk of life, in every role, every career. But again, it's just to remind people that you're always going to get rejection. You can't please all the people all the time, and learn from it, take it with you, look for the positives and move forward. Keep moving on, keep going.
And there's going to be a bit of it in 2021, because if you think about the number of people who are currently looking for work, and when job opportunities come up, and the number of job people who are going to be going for that individual job now, you know, people will have to become resilient, you know, thick-skinned, you know, look at getting some guidance back from them in terms of the areas that they did well, the areas that they didn't and they need to improve on, you know, and actually just focusing on those positive elements and taking them into their next application or their next job search, or you know, it could be a project that they're working on. You know, both you and I in the past, you know, we've had plenty of experience where we've missed out on getting a project that we've really pitched hard for. Mm-hmm. That's part of life, you know. Yeah. and that process is something that we all become used to is a bit comfortable, isn't it? But yeah, we don't like it, but it's something that you just got to get used to. It's part of the process, and you become more resilient for it, you learn from it, you adapt the way sometimes that you approach projects. Yeah. and the ones that you do get become that much more gratifying, you know,
just when you do find someone that you can work with over a long period of time and grow with, I mean, that just that makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah, I did like that comment, you know, in terms that he was making about his time with the ICE exhibition. Mm-hmm. You know, that resonated quite well with me in terms of the fact that, you know, they've been on that, him and that customer have been on that journey together. Yeah. And they've both grown together, and that the stands, you know, adapted and changed as it's gone along on that journey. So, yeah, really, really nice way to start 2021. So, you know, all the best to all the listeners out there. Thanks ever so much for your time again, Ellen, and look forward to the next one coming out next week.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Jack. See you soon. The Events Insight was brought to you by 67PR and Saywood Marketing and Events. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, write us a review, and spread the word.